Session number 17984, Reel 1.
Jim Oates, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Canning Town.
Which year was this?
1919.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Canning Town?
Yes. The school I went to was Holy Trinity School. It was a small school, but very good.
And how old were you when you left school?
When I left school, I was 14 years old.
So that was 1933.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't leave from that school. See, we lived in Canning Town. But when I was 12 and a half, about 1932, we moved to the new estate, LCC estate, in Barking, the Beckentry estate, for better housing. Because where we lived in Canning Town, the poorer area, practically every house had two families. And each family consisted of at least eight with the parents. You can imagine 16 people in one house with no bathroom and a toilet at the bottom of the yard. So when we moved to our father, he worked for the LMS Railway, he was employed. When we moved to Beckentry, to us it was moving to a house with a bathroom, indoor toilet, a garden, because in Canning Town you had no gardens, only backyards. It was heaven. But unfortunately, within 12 months of moving there, after Dad had straightened the garden, he was a hard-working man, he died of cancer.
So when you left school, what job did you take?
Well, I had to go to work quickly, because my mother was left with us four children at the time. And in those days, welfare was not like it was now in 1933 when Dad died. So I left school at 14 on my birthday. The headmaster didn't want me to leave school because, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but I was the top boy in the school. Used to write their external essays and things. But he realised I had to be a breadwinner. One of my uncles was in the building trade, my dad's brother, so I was put into the building trade. And that's where I...
As a bricklayer?
First as a tea boy, till I got used to the building site. I had a little 14-year-old boy running up ladders with two buckets of tea, lighting his fires with damp wood to boil the water to make tea, and get told off by the men because it tastes smoky. But we got through that. And I had to bring my money home to mum. And because of that, as well, my brothers and sister, they wanted to treat me like Dad.
Did you join the TA before the war?
No. No.
Did you ever think about that?
Never thought of it, no.
Were you still in the building trade when war was declared?
Yes, that's why. I couldn't understand it. See, I've known Betty since she was nearly 16. When war was imminent, 1938, come 1939, I was expecting to be called into the army. So we became engaged in the summer of 1939, and expecting to be called into the army, we married January the 1st, 1940. But I didn't go into the army. And then, eventually, after the Cold War, the Blitz started, the Germans, because our work then was contained, even before the Blitz, the building staff was going around bricking up windows in hospitals, in schools, putting air raid shelters. We were more or less doing war work. But still officially, when I asked our building works manager, why haven't I been called into the army? I never got an answer from him, but it was obvious it's because we were doing air raid protection work. So because of that, because I felt guilty like any young man, I joined the Home Guard.
Which unit of the Home Guard did you join?
I can't remember the unit. It was in Dagenham. In Dagenham, our meeting places were there, and we used to do training on the field drain onto the Thames.
What kind of training did you do?
Apart from regimental stuff of oldie, you know, learning to use our rifle, doing mock defence attacks in the fields, because we always anticipate the German parachuters dropping in like they did in Europe.
You all had rifles, did you?
Oh, we issued with a rifle, bayonet and 50 rounds, which we kept with us, took home.
What kind of a rifle was it?
Lee Enfield, 303 was it, yes.
Did you become very proficient with a rifle?
Not then, but I did when I was into the army, because I was sent on a sniper's course.
We'll come on to that later.
Sniper, yes.
But did you think the Germans would invade yourself?
Oh, we were sure of that. Matter of fact, how sure we were, Betty's father, when we got married, naturally expecting to be called up, I moved in with Betty's mum and dad. And I was close to Betty's dad because that's how I met Betty, because he was a bricklayer, and we'd teamed up at work. And that's how I got introduced to his daughter. And because of that, our air raid shelter we extended, being builders, put bunks in, put heating in, ventilation. We made it so that as soon as the air raid started, it was down to the shelter. Because if a bomb hit your house, the shelter was safe. But if a bomb hit the shelter anyway, it wouldn't matter if it was in the house or the shelter, you've gone.
What was your address in Dagenham?
28 Armstead Walk.
And did any bombs fall near you?
No. Oh, yes. I'm saying no. There was plenty of bombs embarking landmines when they were dropping the landmines. But a big joke, speaking of, the people next door used to take the mickey out of myself and the father-in-law, making the family go down into the shelter when air raids started, or even when the sirens started. They used to laugh. They'll stay in their bedroom and Hitler can do what he likes. That was all right until Hitler started dropping incendiary bombs. And then one day we'd gone down to our shelter when the air raid started and the anti-aircraft was firing away. And lots of shrapnel was falling down, banging and pinging on the roof. Because of now incendiary bombs, the Brave family, good Lord, you heard them rushing down the stairs, bang, 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 the kitchen, back door opening and slamming when they died. So they weren't so brave after all, you know.
Was the bombing very heavy in the Dagenham area?
Heavy enough, oh yes. Because whilst a bricklayer waiting to be called up, that used to be one of our emergency jobs. As soon as houses were damaged, roofs blown off, and our job was to immediately repair.
Can you give an example of the type of things you would do?
Oh, yeah, re-roofing houses, and putting back windows. And I was a bit disturbed once. A landmine had fallen, and we'd been rushed to the scene to put right what we... And a young child walked up to me and gave me a paper bag and said, Mummy said she'd give it to you. And when I opened the bag, there was a woman's son inside where a landmine or bomb had hit a shelter and that all. And why that woman should give that child a bag with a human thumb inside. I mean, the kiddie had opened it up because it was all bloody and I thought that was bad.
So what did you do with it?
I forget now. We obviously handed it over to somebody, but I forget who we... The other funny thing during the war, before I got called up, because I was a home guard, we were told if the church bells rang, that meant invasion started, parachutes were dropping. That was the law of the land. There was an air raid on. My father-in-law, George, and myself came up from the shelter to make tea to take down to the family. And whilst we're in the kitchen making tea, we suddenly heard bells ringing. And I said, good Lord, George, I better grab my rifle and report to a home guard HQ. So I grabbed my rifle, found my 50 round of ammunition. But before I set off, we suddenly realised what the church bells were. It was a sound we heard every night. But why that particular night I thought they were church bells, not far from where Armstead Walk was Ford's factory. And they had their own foundry. And at night, you could hear a pounding of metal from that factory, Briggs Motor Bodies and Fords. And that particular night, for some reason, the heavy clanging from the factory sounded to us like bells, but we realised in time it wasn't bells, it was the foundry. We laughed. Because the problem with Fords and Briggs motor bodies, bearing in mind the air raids and the blackouts, they still kept their foundry going. And at night, it, one big huge red glow. And that was...
So it was a marker for the...
It was definitely a marker, yeah. But I suppose chances have to be taken. I don't know.
Did you have any narrow escapes in the Blitz?
Myself personally, no. No.
Did you lose any friends or relatives?
Fortunately, again, no. My mother and father still lived. I say father because when Dad died, his brother took over the family, the one that put me in. So we called him Dad. Younger brother, married mum, took over the family. But they were in their shelter, and naturally in the building trade we put glass walls outside and a garden, smaller than mine, but they were lucky because a flying shell or metal or something had sliced their apple tree almost down and hit the glass wall that we'd built. And the blast wall we built, being in the building trade, that was a blast wall, reinforced with strips of metal and everything.
What did you feel about the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
Well, it's funny you should say that. Because my views on people changed dramatically during the war. Because I've always got on with people. Wherever we went and we travelled all over Europe, wherever I met ordinary people, and an army saying used to be, get your knees under the table. I realised that, apart from national temperaments, all every family want is a happy family, a happy life with enough to live on. It's only the flipping warlords and power-hungry politicians that cause this. And later on I'll come to that with our German prisoners.
But at the time of the Blitz, what did you think of the fire?
Yes, now this is something. Parachutes, we expect them all the time. We never did actually get them. We used to get bags of air planes, you know, bombers and hurricanes and Spitfires. And often a German plane would be shot. And it was, some parachutes had dropped out of one of the German planes that was going to crash. And I angrily said to my father-in-law, I've good ones to get my rifle and shoot the bastards as they come down. And he looked at me, he was a small chap, smaller than me. And he looked at me sternly and said, "Jim, one day you'll be sorry you said that." And I looked at him in surprise because he was in the First World War and he had a terrific shoulder wound left from that First World War where he'd been injured. So I thought he would have hated the Germans. And for him to say that, it didn't make any sense to me. It's only after the war that I realised what he meant.
So were you filled with hatred against the air crews during the battle?
Oh, yes. Well, naturally, we've propaganda, conditioning. We were only told all the bad things about the Nazis, the SS, which was true. But I learned since as I travelled the world that the ordinary people, it's only propaganda and conditioning that brings them to that level, to defend their warlords and politicians.
But do you think you would have gone out and shot at the parachutes?
No, I don't think I would have done. No. I've got proof of that later on, I'll tell you, when the only time, despite my sniper's record, in Greece when I was called to shoot somebody.
What was public morale like in the Dagenham area during the Blitz?
Very good. Very good.
Did you ever come across anybody who had low morale or who wanted to come to an agreement with Hitler?
No, not that I can recall. No.
Did you ever think at that time the war should be called off because of the setbacks?
No. To me, I was brought up to think that this was a right war to stop the Germans oppressing other countries.
Did you ever listen to Churchill's speeches?
Pardon?
Did you ever listen to Churchill?
Oh, yes, yes.
What effect did that have on you?
Well, it made us feel very patriotic and willing to fight for our country.
What about Lord Haw-Haw? Did you listen to him?
A couple of times, yes, on the radio. To us, he was a joke. Funny enough, to listen to Lord Haw-Haw was a joke.
So you didn't believe in what he said?
No.
Now, in the Home Guard, we nowadays see this program Dad's Army. Was it anything like that?
Well, look at that program, naturally. In a sense, it was similar to that, but not quite so. How can I put the word? Made into a comedy is another word. Lack of education, I can't find the word.
Farce?
A bit farcical, but we weren't quite as regimental. We were a bit more serious than them. But nonetheless, when we were together, it would be like them when they're together. Laughing and joking and...
But do you think you would have given an account of yourselves if the Germans had?
I'm sure, yes. I'm sure. Because they weren't all old men. They weren't all old men.
Now, can you tell me how you came to join the army yourself then?
Well, I was waiting to be called up. Couldn't find out I was officially held back because of the building ARP work, air raid precaution work, and the repairs of bombed houses. So I wondered what was going to happen. So eventually Betty and I thought, well, we'll find our own house, which we did. Ordered up furniture. And the day the furniture arrived was the day I got my letter to be called up. And that was in January 1942, 2 years after we were married.
Where did you do the basic training?
Basic training was in Hampshire, just outside Winchester. I think the camp was called Bushy Camp or Bushfield Camp.
And what?
That was with the Royal Fusiliers, the 12th Battalion Royal Fusiliers.
How were you treated by the people in charge?
You mean the NCOs, or?
Yes.
Very strict. And most of those in charge training us were XTAs, or not XTAs, but territories. They were very strict. And one incident, well, it's worth recording. I didn't soldier too well when I went into the army. Because of that, the unnecessary petty strictness. And also, I had a worry on my mind because I said earlier on, we'd just moved into our own house, waiting for the furniture, bedroom and dining room and things that we'd paid cash for. And when it arrived, that was the day before I was called up, it wasn't what we'd paid for. We'd paid well for good stuff, and this was terrible. So we made them take it back, so we couldn't move into our house. And then I got solicitors to act on my behalf when I got called into the army and left it to my father-in-law too. And so with that on my mind, I didn't soldier too well, and it came to a peak when we were doing our morning run. And our morning run was more or less in our gym shorts and singlet with our plimsolls. And when it was finished outside our billet, officer would be there. And the usual army instruction, officer on parade, dismiss, which meant you had to turn to your right, smartly, salute, because the officer's there. But because we were in loose order, didn't have a cap, the instruction went, you can't salute without a cap. So when you get the order, officer on parade, dismiss, when you turn to your right, you come up on your toes, like a ballet dancer. And so when the order came out to do that, as everybody turned round, came up on their toes, I couldn't. With the worry I had of my mind at home and the stupidity of... I just broke ranks and ran to the billet. The sergeants, who were very, very strict, ran after me. But fortunately, a lieutenant stopped them and he followed me in. And he asked me, why did I do that? And I told him what I've just said. And told him about my worry at home. And that officer said, well, you better go home. Have 36-hour leave. I said, I can't, I haven't got the money. He gave me the fare to go home. That was a Jewish lieutenant. And I've never forgotten it. When I came back, I soldiered. NCO's Carter, became a Lance Corporal. And that led to me then wanting to go from being a corporal to... I wanted to be an officer at that time because our father, during World War I, was promoted on the field on an acting basis when things got bad. They made him a lieutenant. And because Dad had been a lieutenant in the Essex Regiment, I felt I wanted to emulate.
So you performed better as a soldier because of that man's kindness?
Oh, yes. Yes. Very much so. Yeah. It made me act. See, these sergeants, I'll give you another instance where these sergeants were unbelievably, unnecessarily strict, doing their usual... what's the word now? I'm 78.
Drills?
Our drills. You know, the hard drill, where you run with full pack and you've got to do terrific, you know. And that ended up, after doing all the battle drill, you had to leap over a huge pit that was covered with barbed wire at the bottom. And you could just about make this jump, because you were so tired. And there was one young soldier who'd only come back to us from an appendix operation. And he wasn't fit. He should never been on that particular battle drill course. And when he finally reached this big pit, he balked. He couldn't jump. And the sergeant, training sergeant, forced him to jump, made him go back and forced him to jump. And naturally, the lad fell into the pit on the barbed wire and was taken out. And because of that, when they got him out of the pit, he picked his rifle up and shot the sergeant dead. Then ran into the billet.
Did you see that happen?
Yeah, I was there. It was terrible.
What kind of lad was he?
An ordinary lad, like one of us. But he was in a terrible state because of this appendix operation. Fortunately, the regimental sergeant major took over because the sergeants and that were trying to get at him, but the regimental sergeant major spoke to the lad from another, from the floor above where he was, and persuaded him to come down, drop his rifle, and come down without his rifle, and he did. We later heard he was obviously court-martialed, and something to do with Majesty's pleasure, you know, taken away. Never heard any more after that, but that is a fact.
But was it well known to the NCOs that he had had this operation?
Oh, yes. Of course it was, yeah. Because he'd returned to them after this. He'd had the operation and then came back to the 12th Battalion Fusiliers.
Yeah. Where did you go to after your basic training?
After the basic training, I've got some short notes here.
Don't worry about the notes, just go from memory.
All right. We were kept in England far longer than what I thought we would. And to me, I can't find the right words, but because my call-up was deferred, and then in the 12th Battalion Fusiliers kept so long in England, you sort of felt you weren't pulling your weight. You weren't doing anything. Especially when some of your own family had already been caught in the first coming back to Dunkirk, my cousin got killed, you know. But then one realised why we were kept there, because we were expecting a German invasion. And so we had to have troops around the south coast ready for an invasion. That's the only reason that we were kept there. We ended up in the Isle of Wight for that one reason, you know.